Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to another episode of the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Talking about the Florida State-Michigan game, the Orange Bowl in the first segment here, and then a little bit of recruiting at the end. Going to do a little bit of a quick and dirty, since we already basically covered what happened in this game in the preview podcast. I mean, fair to say, we largely got this one right, this Michigan team happened to be a great matchup for Florida State. Florida State took advantage of those matchups. It was a quality Michigan defense. One thing I will say I was wrong on, I do not think that this Michigan defense was the best defense Florida State played this year. I think the semifinal game between Ohio State and Clemson indicated that perhaps Clemson was the best defense that Florida State played this year, but very similar results against both Michigan and Clemson, the Michigan and Clemson defenses for this Florida State team, and an offense and a defense that really progressed over the course of 2016. One of the youngest teams in the country coming into the year, this Florida State team got a lot younger with the loss of Derwin James in the back seven, really changed things defensively and changed the complexion of the season for Florida State. But a team that developed, and I think maybe the most impressive thing about this team in 2016 is the way that they could have mailed it in after they were essentially eliminated from playoff contention with that last second loss to North Carolina, and that on the heels of getting humiliated by Louisville. But instead, they came back and they fought, and they really should have beaten Clemson. They outplayed Clemson in Tallahassee. Lost that one close and still then brought it for the rest of the season. This is a team that grew and set a lot of the foundation, I think, necessary for the next couple of years, where they're going to be as talented as any team in the country over the next couple of years. And I'm including Alabama in that. You look at who Alabama's returning next year and who Florida State's returning next year, and that game is going to be a war, without question. And the more interesting thing, we'll talk about this a little bit later, is Florida State may actually come into that game with the better defensive front in 2017 because of who Alabama loses. Now, they're going to replace everybody, of course, with five-star recruits and everything, but FSU's got the same level, essentially, of talent across its front, and those are guys that all got seasoned over the last couple of years and are ready to roll for that 2017 season. So that's going to be something we'll talk about more in the offseason. But just that's one of my initial reflections coming out of this Orange Bowl, is how much this team grew and how much they had to learn to work and maintain a consistent level of play that they just didn't have earlier in the year. And they were able to come out and end up winning a close game, a game that should not have been as close as it was in the Orange Bowl, against a quality opponent to close the year and to sustain program momentum. And this is something else. I mean, I think it's one of those things that the media often oversells, is this idea of how important it is to close the season with a bowl win, and you know how every year you get that bowl bump where the teams that win their bowl games, especially the ones that win it going away, end up getting overrated, basically, as a rule, going into the next year, because it's like, oh, well, you know, you remember the last thing we saw, they were just tearing up this team or that team, and you start to see, basically, this assumption that whatever you saw in the bowl game is going to carry over. But bowl games are, in terms of predictive power for the next year, really not that important. I mean, Florida State could have lost that game and perhaps been no worse for the wear going into 2017. That said, I do think that this particular Orange Bowl does have more to say in terms of Florida State's program momentum, and was more important for the Florida State program than the normal non-playoff bowl game. And that's because of the perception aspect of things, and also because of how young this Florida State team was. So for Michigan, if Michigan had won this bowl game, it wouldn't mean a thing for next year, because they lose pretty much every major contributor from that team. They lose the entire defense, essentially. They're losing, you know, they're going to be totally different next year. Florida State, on the other hand, loses two guys that were contributors on defense. And then, of course, Dalvin Cook, whose loss is almost immeasurable, given the way that he kept coming up big and all this. But when you think about Florida State, this gave them another double-digit win, another double-digit season, and it gave them another win over a big-name program and over the coach that everybody's talking about with Harbaugh, you know, the guy that, you know, that he's bringing Michigan back and, you know, the hot new flavor. They were able to win that game and demonstrate that the Florida State program hasn't really slipped, and that they still belong in the discussion with the elite. And in terms of recruiting and just overall perception of the program, it, I think, was an important way to close the season, especially opening with Alabama in 2017, because of the possibility that that's a loss. Now, the other thing, too, is not only did they beat Michigan, and they beat them in a gripping game with, you know, that last minute come from behind aspect to it, where they'd been ahead all game, but they did come from behind at the end to win that, and, you know, all of those elements. But anybody watching that game knew that Florida State dominated that game. Perhaps maybe some of the Michigan fans and partisans that have been interacting with me on Twitter, maybe there are some exceptions to that they think that the game was more or less even, but that game was not even. Florida State was far and away the better team on that field. So now let's go ahead and talk a little bit about that, and we'll correlate a little bit of what we talked about pregame and how this worked. Now remember, I picked Florida State to win this game 31 to 17. And the reason that I picked Florida State by two scores, if you remember, is that I thought Florida State would be able to run on them with some big plays with Dalvin Cook, similar to what they did against Clemson, particularly with that counter play and with some power O stuff when they once Michigan was flowing to the zone based stuff that Florida State does. And that's exactly what happened. And now, I didn't think it would happen on 3rd and 22, where Dalvin Cook is just, you know, Dalvin Cook does Dalvin Cook things, and those things are pretty special. But the thing is, Florida State was able to run on that Michigan front, and lots of people were surprised by that. But the Florida State offensive line has been good in the running game all year. The thing that maybe was a little bit more surprising is only giving up two sacks in this game. And although Francois was under pressure a lot, he was not under an inordinate amount of pressure given the quality of that Michigan front. They pass blocked a lot better in this game than they had, say, first half of the season. That offensive line really took some steps forward, and nobody more than right tackle Rick Leonard, who looked like a draft pick at right tackle. Maybe not a high round draft pick at this point, but that's not out of the question in terms of development and all of this at this point, because he showed against Taco Charlton and those Michigan edge rushers the ability to move his feet and bend and use his length to run those guys out of plays. And it's really, really impressive what has happened as he's finally settled into that position. And you can see why they wanted to start the year with him, because the talent is absolutely there for that right tackle position with Rick Leonard. And he has the feet and the bend to be able to be a quality, not just a quality pass protector, which all of those things are necessary, but also a mauler in the running game. So that bodes very well for next year. Rod Johnson didn't have his best game, but again, a quality offensive tackle. We'll see whether he comes back or not. Rumblings are, you know, generally that the thinking around Tallahassee it seems to be that he's leaning towards going, but, you know, none of that is determined at this point, at least at the time that I'm recording this. But they were generally able to protect Francois. Now, the one exception to that is when Taco Charlton got basically a free run at Francois and in the first quarter and very nearly put him out of the game. And actually, this is something I haven't seen discussed a whole lot so far. I actually wonder whether or not that hit on Francois in particular, and there were a couple others, but that one, and then the one a little bit later that where he got a shoulder rolled up on. Francois was 9 of 27 passing in this game, which is not good, 33%. And to some degree, that continued his trend of inaccuracy against better defenses on the season. Now, when he did complete passes, he made them count, and that was what was important against this Michigan team. And you could see Jimbo Fisher called this game pretty much perfectly. I mean, he called this game to be a big play offense against a team that he knew that Florida State wasn't going to be able to just grind down the field and, you know, chip away, you know, 3 and 5 yard plays the whole way. But he called this game for Florida State to get some really big plays. I think it was a very, very well called game in that regard. But I wonder whether or not one of the main reasons for Francois' lesser accuracy in this game is that he was pretty dinged up, especially after that big shot. You could see him, and that was right up under the ribs or or in the hip area, that whole area there on the right side, which is you have to stretch that side when you throw. And a lot of throw power and accuracy comes from there, and those of you who are boxing fans, you know that this idea of you go to the body early and you try to take the fighter's power away by going to the body, and so much of a boxer's power comes from the ground, you know, up through the feet and the legs, and then delivered by the trunk with those powerful obliques and abdominal muscles and all of this as you're transferring into getting your weight behind the punch. It's very, very similar for a quarterback, where you get hit up under the ribs, and first of all, it's harder to breathe. But the other thing is, in terms of being able to deliver the football and get your weight properly behind the football to deliver accurate throws, that actually makes a difference when you've taken a shot up in those ribs or in that hip area up in there. And to me, it looked like Francois was not quite throwing comfortably through the rest of the game after that. And you think about it, he started the game on fire. I mean, he started with that 23-yard throw to Kermit Whitfield, then the 42-yard throw which was a dime, by the way, to Dalvin Cook down the sideline, and then he took that big shot and just never quite looked like he was throwing as comfortably as he had in those first three or four throws before he took that shot. And then after he got that shoulder rolled on later, it looked even more uncertain on that. So I suspect that some of the inaccuracy in this game had to do with that big shot. And that was, you know, it's amazing that the kid was able to sustain that kind of shot and still come back and play the way that he did. Now, granted, a lot of people out there are going to blame the right tackle, blame Rick Leonard for coming inside on that. But to me, that looked like, especially when I saw the discussion after the play between Fisher and Francois, that looked like a quarterback mistake. Francois needed to get rid of that football and get it out in the flat to Dalvin Cook, because that guy, by protection, the end man there, seems to have been left by the protection so that the hot goes to the flat so that the quarterback keeps himself from getting hit. And that's an area that DeAndre Francois is going to really, really need to improve going into next year, particularly since they're facing Alabama in that first game, is understanding the protections, understanding the hots, understanding the appropriate places to throw to make sure that even against pressure, he's getting the ball out quickly enough not to take all those shots, and quickly enough to the right person to be able to make defenses pay for bringing pressure. Now, against Alabama, that gets further complicated because Alabama, particularly with, you know, 8 months to prepare, is basically going to have memorized all of Florida State's hots out of their normal plays and their normal situations, so that they're going to be jumping those things, which then means Florida State's going to have extra wrinkles that are going to be put in to counter what Saban does. I mean, basically, this is the Vizzini scene from The Princess Bride that we're going to be watching in the first game next year of, you know, well, I know I can't drink the one in front of me because, you know, but I can't drink the one in front of you because you know that I can't drink the one in front of me. So that's where it's going to be really, really interesting watching Fisher and Saban go at each other on that. But Francois still got to understand how to get rid of the football a little quicker so he doesn't take those shots so that he can keep his efficiency up. And that's going to be critically important next year when Florida State doesn't have a decent backup, at least as of right now. Unless something really changes, Florida State, you know, I don't think anybody and any onlookers trust JJ Cosentino as a stopgap in the case of Francois getting hurt or whatnot in 2017. I think that would be a pretty bad deal. So Francois is going to need to keep himself healthy and going to need to keep himself from taking those shots in 2017. And in many cases, it'll be more valuable for him to just get rid of the football and not only live to see another play, but live to be healthy for the next game and for the next drive and so on. That he's going to have to continue to focus on that. But in any case, Florida State was able to run the football well enough with big chunk plays in particular against Michigan. You could see that Florida State exposed Michigan's linebackers. This is something that we talked about in the podcast in the preview podcast that if Michigan's defense had a weakness, it would be at that linebacker position. Florida State was going to target Jabril Peppers and also those linebackers with the tight ends and with the running backs in the passing game. And you could see that right away on the first drive. Now, Peppers obviously didn't play in this game. I don't need to dwell on that since Brian Greasy and Michigan graduate Brian Greasy and the ESPN broadcast dwelt on that not only through the game but in the coverage after the game. But you could see that Florida State targeted those guys on the first drive, putting Izzo down the seam drawing a pass interference to set up the first touchdown. But they targeted those guys all game in that second group that group of linebackers so that they didn't have to go after the corners in the secondary, which were stronger. And that really made a difference for FSU. I mean, they schemed it extremely well and took advantage of that vulnerability. And again, one of the other things that we talked about is that Michigan's interior defensive line was just not as big or imposing as what Florida State had faced in, particularly in Clemson, but also with Miami and a few others that had given FSU trouble on the inside. And Florida State was able to block those defensive tackles in the running game and was able to get some burst plays as a result. So everything basically went kind of as we expected, or as listeners of this program should have expected, such that Florida State really dominated the game. And you know, the Florida State offense put up 6 yards per play against one of the better defenses in the country. Certainly, I think a top five defense in the country. I think maybe the most surprising thing or the most perhaps impressive thing was the play of Noonie Murray against Jordan Lewis, who is a very, very good corner. I think he's not quite as good as his rep among the media and many analysts. I think, as far as the NFL goes, he's not a first rounder, probably a second round type guy and really more of a slot guy in the NFL. I'm just not sure he has the measurables and certainly the length to be an outside guy in the NFL. But Noonie Murray, particularly on that last play where he went up and you got a 5'11 and a half or so receiver plucking the ball on an elite corner, like that, high pointing it. That first of all, that call shows just how confident Jimbo Fisher has become in what he has with Noonie Murray, calling that fade from the slot. It was not a smash concept, it was a fade from the slot with the outside coming inside. So it's similar to that, but not exactly. It's not a corner. It was a fade. Calling a fade to that guy against Jordan Lewis just shows exactly how confident that Fisher is in Murray's talent level and what he's capable of doing. Goes to show quite a bit of, you know, again, the future is bright at the wide receiver position. Another that, you know, obviously showed how bright the future is Keith Gavin on that last kick return, which not many wide receivers, not many true freshman wide receivers are running over a Michigan linebacker like that. And one of the things actually that I think that brought up, by the way, that that I think is worth mentioning for next year, and this is something that had been mentioned to me coming out of camp, is that in the kick return game, Kermit Whitfield, as explosive and as fast as Kermit Whitfield is, when he had complete space in front of him, there's very few guys in college football that are going to be able to run with Kermit Whitfield. There's no doubt about that. But one of the things that was mentioned to me coming out of camp is that actually some of the other kick return options, at least one of my sources was saying, some of the other kick return options actually may have been better options than Kermit Whitfield because of their ability to run through tackles. And basically my source had said, the problem that we're having on kick return isn't necessarily just blocking. The problem is that for a kick returner, you've got to be able to block, you've got to be able to break that first tackle. You've got to be able to run through an arm tackle at some point to be able to set up taking off downfield. And, you know, Kermit is going to outrun everybody if he gets that seam, but he just never breaks that first tackle. And I think you could see that in this one where Gavin ran through the one tackle and then all of a sudden there was that big seam. And my source had said that really he had been impressed by Ryan Green as a kick returner in camp, and also by Amir Rasul, who he thinks is going to be an elite kick returner once he gets that opportunity. So that's another interesting thing. Looking forward to next year, is what difference is it going to make having a little bit bigger but still extremely fast? I mean, Rasul is not a whole lot slower than Kermit Whitfield. I mean, kid ran 10.4 in the 100 meters. So, I mean, you're talking about elite football speed and carries his pads really well. But doing that at a significantly larger body size and the ability to run through tackles, Rasul and Ryan Green, if Ryan Green decides to return for one more year, those guys and Keith Gavin, of course, who is obviously pretty good at this based on an N of one in the Michigan game, those guys may give Florida State more opportunities in the kick return game than what Kermit Whitfield, who of course has his, one shining moment or had his one shining moment, in the national championship game against Auburn. And, but since then he really hasn't had, a ton of big plays out of that position, and I wonder whether or not with some bigger guys getting back there who still have terrific speed, if Florida State's going to suddenly take a jump forward in the kick return game. So that's another thing to take from this win over Michigan. Now on the other side of the ball, Florida State's defense, I think we can safely say, made major improvements as the season went on. It was not just that the offenses got weaker. It was that the defense got better. And that bodes very well because you're basically going to, this defense is going to lose Marquez White and it's going to lose DeMarcus Walker, who had just a season for the ages this year. But it returns everyone else and then adds Derwin James to this group. So, I mean, that defense has a chance to be silly good next year. And they dominated that Michigan offense. 3.4 yards per play by an offense is just not very good. And that defense limited a Jim Harbaugh offense, an offense that will challenge you and had some playmakers. I mean, Darbo, we talked about, was the guy that Florida State had to worry about and he did have one big catch down the sideline. But aside from that, I mean, they didn't have any major plays. They had one 30-yard run in the fourth quarter as the defense got tired and with Trey Marshall off the field. But the Florida State offense or Florida State defense dominated that Michigan offense, particularly up front. And you could hear it with the Michigan interviews after the game where they were talking about that is the best defensive line they'd seen all year. And quite frankly, I think that as they closed the year, Florida State had one of the three best defensive lines in the country. Alabama, Clemson, and Florida State had the three best defensive lines in the country. Once Derek Nnadi got healthy, once Josh Sweat got healthy and started to play the way that he's capable of, and some of those other guys started to develop, that defensive line was extremely, extremely good. And they're going to be, again, with Derek Nnadi announcing after the game that he was returning, that defensive line has a chance to be every bit as good next year, even without DeMarcus Walker, because of some of the other guys that they have to fill that spot. And I don't think they're just going to move Josh Sweat over and put Brian Burns on the field as a three down player. I think he's too small for that. You may see Sweat move over at times, but I do think you're going to see a lot of different bodies split the 800 snaps that DeMarcus Walker had at that strong side defensive end spot. They're not going to play one guy 800 snaps there. You're going to see three or four guys take those 800 snaps in varying amounts. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see who those guys are. I think Sweat will take some of those snaps. I think we're going to see Janarius Robinson take a number of those snaps. I think a lot of people in the program are very excited to see Robinson take that step forward as he moves into the spring and into camp next year, to see how good he can become. I think Josh Kando is going to be in the discussion with the way, and we'll talk a little bit about that in future episodes, but I think the way that he looked at the Under Armour All-Star Game practices, All-America Game practices, and so on, And in that game itself, he's a guy that's going to push for early time. Although I wouldn't be surprised if, when he's on the field, if Sweat does move to strong side defensive end, and then Kando is at the spot that Sweat's at now, because of him being a little bit smaller than Sweat at this point. But ultimately, I think Kando grows into probably a 275 pound type guy, who is maybe a Mario Williams type body. I mean, he's a rare kid, rare talent. But, Janarius Robinson is a guy. There was a lot of excitement about Keith Bryant at that spot before he got hurt in the fall. Wilkerson showed some potential there when he was there this year. They're going to split a lot of guys at that spot. Going to be very, very good defensively up front again. But either way, they dominated the Michigan front all game. Michigan's majority of Michigan's plays came from the quarterback breaking some contain or making some sort of play, shaking a guy off, and Spate actually made a number of plays with his feet and getting the ball out of his hands on broken plays. That's where most of their plays came from, and Florida State was still in excellent position in terms of angles and so on to keep those broken plays from going too long. I do think that the pregame analysis that we had was pretty much dead on, that Michigan was about the seventh best, maybe eighth best offense that Florida State had faced, very similar to Miami. And the results were very similar to what Florida State put up against Miami. But I think one of the other things that I found really interesting about this game is how many parallels there were actually to the Florida State-Clemson game, where Florida State led comfortably right up until the point that Trey Marshall got ejected for targeting. And I think that was a silly targeting call. Once again, I mean, he was not targeting the guy's head. He made a football move. So he wasn't defenseless in my view, but, then ducked hit the offensive player ducked down, and there's just not much you can do as a defensive player there when, you're gonna hit high sometimes. But the question is whether you target high. And the way the rule's written is targeting with contact to above the shoulders, and it's not just contact above the shoulders, it's targeting with contact above the shoulders, and he didn't target there. But anyway, I digress. After Marshall went out, Michigan was able to move the football better than they had the rest of the game and scored 14 points, obviously benefited from the 15 yards on that penalty to begin with. But they scored 14 points after Marshall went out, just like what happened with Clemson. Marshall went out against Clemson, and Clemson scored 17 points. Exactly the same kind of thing. And frankly, these games would have been a total mirror image if somehow there had been a phantom blocking below the waist call on Dalvin Cook's long run in the fourth quarter that stemmed the tie, that 71-yard run on 3rd and 22. If a flag, let's just presume a flag had been thrown there, Florida State probably loses this game despite dominating it. And then you basically have a Clemson game redux as a result of an ejection, and Florida State just not having enough bodies in the secondary to compensate for the lack of Derwin James, Nate Andrews, Ermin Lane and Trey Marshall once Marshall went out. And you could see that, that made a big difference in the secondary. And it's going to be, again, it's going to be really, really a big difference once Florida State has Derwin James and Ermin Lane and Trey Marshall. And potentially, if he gets his sixth year, Nate Andrews back in the defensive secondary next year. It'll be, now, of course, that, ejection means that Trey Marshall is going to have to sit out the first half of the Alabama game, which is not a good thing for Florida State in that opener. But it was interesting to see how closely those two games paralleled for the Florida State defense, in that they basically had held Michigan in check and were dominating the game defensively right up until Trey Marshall went out. And you could see how important having a quality safety who could come up and be physical in the run game, as well as having some range in the pass game, mattered to this defense. So, I think otherwise the game basically went as expected. I said prior to the game, I don't know that I'd said it specifically on the pregame podcast, but you can extrapolate from my 14-point spread that I'd projected in that podcast. I'd said before the game that Michigan would need to go +2 in the turnover margin to win the game. And that if Michigan went +2, then the game would be pretty much even. That they'd have a chance, but Florida State should win as long as they don't go -3 or worse. As long as they don't go worse than -2, Florida State would have a really good chance to win. Well, that's what happened. Florida State went -2. The last interception by Becker is irrelevant because that was a fourth down, desperation deal. Count that as a Hail Mary type interception. Florida State was -2 in the game and still won the game. That suggests that, again, Florida State was better by about 2 scores than this Michigan team. There's a lot to be optimistic about, given all the players that Florida State's going to return for 2017, as we've been talking about throughout the podcast. But we'll address a lot of those things and what to expect from various position changes or who's going to fill certain roles and that sort of thing in 2017 in future podcasts. But just briefly before we wrap up here, a little bit of a recruiting update. I think it's pretty clear, as I mentioned earlier, Florida State got one of the best defensive linemen in the country with Josh Kando. I think you could argue that he was the best defensive lineman or offensive lineman at the Under Armour All-America practices or in the game. Really, really showed that he can be an elite edge player, maybe the top defensive end prospect in the country. There was never any doubt about him in terms of what he brought to the table physically. He's always looked like he just belongs in the NFL. But you could see that his ability to move his feet and with him learning how to use his hands a little bit and all that, he's just going to be a special player. And I think is going to be a guy that, as an early enrollee, is going to have a chance to put up, more than, say, 200 snaps over the course of his freshman year and is going to get some meaningful time, which is not all that common from edge guys at this level. But Josh Sweat did it, and I think we'll see Josh Kando really push for some major reps in 2017. But again, you can't forget that Florida State has another guy that looks like he already belongs in the NFL. That's also is going to be out there as a youngster who came in more raw, but has, again, first, second round potential if he grows a little bit as a player. And that's Janarius Robinson, so who's another guy that I'm really looking forward to see how he develops in the spring and in camp. The other guy that the other big get recently that we talked about a little bit before is Cam Akers, who stylistically looks so much like Dalvin Cook. He's just 10 pounds bigger and thicker in the lower half. He has looked the part at the U.S. Army All-America practices as well. And the thing that has really stuck out about him is his ability in the passing game. Bud Elliott reported on Twitter that he had shown some real physicality in pass protection, which was one of the questions that you would have about a guy who'd played quarterback in high school. But that he showed that he really was willing to step in and be a physical pass protector. And that's the one thing that would keep him off the field as a freshman. If he's able to pick that up in the spring and in the fall, he'll play. He may get the bulk of the carry, the majority. I wouldn't say necessarily the bulk, but the majority of the carries in 2017 may go to him as a true freshman if he's able to step in and pass protect well. And the other thing is that kid has shown wide receiver level hand ability to catch naturally with his hands and just instinctiveness in running routes and creating space and all that. He's more instinctive in all those respects than Dalvin was. Or is. Dalvin worked very hard to become a good receiver out of the backfield. Akers appears to be coming in as a natural in those respects, much more so. So it's really, really going to be interesting to see how Florida State uses those two players as freshmen. Rarely will you hear me, and you know, you've heard me, those of you who've listened to this program, this podcast for a long time, know that I'm generally the one saying pump the brakes on freshmen. These two freshmen that Florida State just landed that are early enrollees really have a chance to play and play a lot as freshmen and to be big contributors from day one. And that's pretty rare. There's going to be a few others. One of the things I immediately got a message after Akers committed saying, you know, basically Florida State is certainly not done. Recruiting, that there are some big fish that they're going to continue to land. And right now I would project for them to get, Marvin Wilson, the big defensive tackle out of Houston, who played well, showed power and quickness in the Under Armour practices and in the game, although he needs to get a little bit more in shape, which is normal for high school defensive tackles. I think they're going to end up flipping Malik Gray from Tennessee, and they're probably going to be one or two others that may surprise some people in terms of landing some top shelf players in recruiting. We'll talk about that here in the next podcast. I'm actually going to do one sort of shorter podcast in advance of the national title game, where, by the way, I do think Clemson is going to beat Alabama. I think they're in terms of matchups, Alabama may be the better team overall, but I think Clemson happens to match up in all the right ways to beat Alabama, so long as they don't turn it over all that much and, you know, allow Alabama's defense to score. I think Clemson can score on Alabama. I'm not sure that Alabama can score all that much on Clemson because I don't think they can throw the football all that well. But I want to talk a little bit about that and about some of the looking toward the future things, and then do a little bit more discussion about some podcast or about some recruiting on the next podcast. But until then, we're just going to go ahead and wrap this podcast now. Once again, Florida State beats Michigan in the Orange Bowl to put a successful finish on a bit of a disappointing year, but a year that sets up, I think, potentially one of the better runs in Florida State school history over the next few years with the level of talent that's on the on campus and is about to arrive on campus in Tallahassee. So really a good way to set up a pretty good run, similar again to what happened in 2012 with an Orange Bowl win setting up the national title in 2013 and the run in 2014. Only I think if you talk to Fisher and some of the other people in the Florida State program, they think that there's more talent on the roster right now than there was going into 2013. There's just not a Jameis Winston. So really all they have to do is, as long as Francois can develop a quarterback and stay healthy next year, then the sky's the limit for the near future for Florida State. But we'll go ahead and wrap the podcast here. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Doc Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.